a fourth case of the day, Dubergin v. St. Vincent Hospital.
Morning, Your Honor. It's an age discrimination case. Why is it different than all the employment cases that have come before this court? I submit to you because of one person, James Hauser, the exclusive decision maker. There is nothing absent from this case, factually, testimonially, principally, that this court has numerous times said a plaintiff is deficient. Number one, and I would, in my brief time, look at the context of his statement, beginning to get rid of the old guard. He doesn't say anything. He can't remember it. Then subsequently, counsel asks, well, what did it mean? Well, it would have meant position. Well, why? Because position is the only reason that my client was terminated. He was an executive. He wasn't a janitor. This was an executive position. Critically, when did this happen? 2 weeks before the terminations.
I guess
it dealt with. Pardon me.
I'm sorry. You finish. I'm sorry.
No, Your Honor. Go ahead.
No. Please finish your thought.
The difference is that it's context. The context of his statement is directly related to the reduction in force as to the plaintiff and three other executives. And he terminated them on the same day. There's no camouflage. And the only reason he said the plaintiff, I asked for testimonial consideration. The only reason he gave, I eliminated positions, not people. But he didn't say, I'm getting rid of positions, I'm reorganizing, I don't like the management style. He could have said a lot of things. He said, I'm getting rid of the old guard. And he said that to an individual who was saved, who was part of the reorganization. In the context of when it was saved, it wasn't a janitor, it wasn't an offhand comment. It was directly related to the termination of executives.
Well,
Marianne
the
Scott.
The RIF goes beyond executives. Wasn't it 300 employees?
Oh, yes, sir. You're right. Yes, lots of,
well,
and
why,
I'm.
Why doesn't the context just refer to the 300?
It doesn't refer to the 300. I suggested an inference could be drawn that he fired four individuals on one day, starting with the plaintiff and three other executives. He didn't fire anyone else personally. Now, we're not talking about the entire 300 or 400. It's the ones he terminated. And he was an experienced terminator. And Judge Tender pointed that out. He had three priors. He was an experienced terminator. Why would anybody, I submit to Your Honor, if that statement is admissible evidence, look at it, if I was the appellant and not the appellee, and you were, and I was asking you, what weight may a jury attribute to that or ascribe to that statement, and the fact that he didn't remember it, and then was asked by defense counsel, well, if you remembered it, what did it mean? And then I asked him, you should have said, you really meant some of the old guard. Well, yeah, that's the adoption principle that this court said in my case of Partington versus Broyhill. He adopted what I said. I would point out that Judge Tinder accused my client of being arrogant, neglectful, or apathetic about why he didn't apply for post-termination positions. He didn't apply. That doesn't end the inquiry. I think the error was he wasn't ever apprised. The positions were never posted. But more critically, isn't the plaintiff allowed to rely on the chief executive officer of the parent and chairman of the board when he says it's over? I'm not here to change anything. That's surely a jury question. I think the fundamental principle that the error that Judge Tinder committed was weight. We talk about inferences and we talk about evidence. But we never really talk about in the analysis of a case what weight. And we all know that a jury can put weight, a lot of weight, on particular evidence and say, we weigh that more. Could they not have said, based on the sole testimony of the exclusive decision maker, not only doesn't he remember, I think he does remember, based on the total testimony, and I don't think he's truthful. Or I think he meant old guard. He said people. Old guard are people.
How do we factor in the fact that at the discharge meeting, Mr. Hauser did give Dr. Tubergen a letter inviting him to apply for new positions? I know it was a form letter.
Correct, Your Honor.
But why would not that count?
Oh, it certainly, the defense could argue that to a jury. Then equally, I could argue you didn't post the position subsequent to his termination, to wit the Spannenberg, but you didn't post that. But more importantly, even if you posted it, the chairman of the board 2 weeks after termination says it's over. I don't think you ought to apply. He didn't even suggest, if you look at the testimony, you ought to apply for it. It's over. I'm not here to change anything. Isn't the jury entitled to consider that? Well, weigh it. Who to believe and should he? That's the futility argument. I think the issue of futility, the issue is even before that, is it was never posted. I am trying to establish a case for my client, not 300. I think the testimonial evidence is such that it wasn't pride or arrogance that caused the plaintiff not to apply for a position that was never known. That's certainly absurd. No court would ever say you must apply for something that's unknown. The other is when the chairman of the board says it's over. I mean, that's a pretty significant statement not to apply. I mean, that's my time. I'll reserve the rest for rebuttal. Thank you,
Mr. Capel.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Kevin Gefell for Defendant Appellee, St. Vincent Hospital. As Mr. Haston points out, and as a matter of fact, the Supreme Court has recently stated so simply in employment discrimination cases, context matters. And Judge Tinder's decision should be affirmed in this case because the full, undisputed context surrounding the comments and situations involving the reduction in force and reorganization of the executive service lines demonstrates that Dr. Tubergen cannot demonstrate evidence sufficient for a reasonable jury to find that he was discriminated against.
Well, let's see how we can figure out this. The fact that the CEO tells him after the discharge, it's over. When you're told by the CEO, it's over, what should his next step have been? Say, well, no, it's not over. I'm going to apply with this form letter.
Your Honor, his next step should have been to take the invitation that Jim Hauser gave him through the form letter, and it's disputed whether or not Mr. Hauser told him as well that he should apply for other positions, and to seek out other employment with St. Vincent.
Well, if it's disputed, is that not a jury question?
It's a fact that we'll assume in Dr. Tubergen's favor at this point that Mr. Hauser didn't state that. But the more important fact about the conversation he had with Mr. Capone, again, it goes back to the context of the conversation. It wasn't as if Mr. Capone just bumped into Tubergen and told him it was over. Dr. Tubergen and Mr. Capone were friends. They bumped into each other on a golf course. Mr. Capone, the chief executive officer, says, come on in. He just wanted to reassure him that, look, we're friends. The decision's been made. It's over. It wasn't as if it's over, don't ever come back to St. Vincent. The other important factor to keep in mind here, Your Honors,
But wait a minute. Aren't there two ways to look at that? I mean, I don't understand that. It's over doesn't mean it's over. What does it mean? Our lunch is over? Our visit is over? What does it mean?
Certainly could have multiple meanings, Your Honor, which a jury might be entitled to view if there wasn't other broader facts to take into consideration about the context of what took place here. That conversation also took place a period of time after Dr. Terbergen had been terminated. After he was terminated, shortly thereafter, he received a organizational chart which had other positions on it that said they were to be determined, which he knew about. And if he wanted to go after it at that point, he could have before Mr. Capone tells him that it's over. Further, it's
that
important.
That was what? How many weeks would you say that was? A 2 week?
The record was unclear as to when that conversation took place, and I don't have the site directly in front of me. I believe it was a matter of weeks to months in which the time that he met with Mr. Capone on the golf course. But the time period with which he received the organizational chart, though, was nearly immediately after the reorganization took his termination took place and the announcement of the reduction in force and reorganization transpired. More importantly, though, Your Honors, I think to get back to the other point, even if he did say it's over, that doesn't mean it's over because of age. And that's the important point that Dr. Terbergen has to show here. And the sole piece of evidence that he relies upon, which Mr. Hafston articulated, is the beginning to get rid of the old guard comment. And, Your Honors, I submit to the court that the only admissible evidence about that comment comes from the one person who has any personal knowledge about it and was involved in that comment being made, allegedly, and that's Dr. Harry Laws, who is the administrator of the Children's Hospital. Again, context is what matters here. Dr. Laws made it absolutely clear in his deposition that comment was in a conversation about the Children's Hospital, not the service line organizational structure in which Dr. Terbergen was employed, and it was specifically about the termination of Mary Ann Scott. She was the only employee referenced in that conversation, according to Dr. Laws. Dr. Terbergen wasn't referenced. The service lines and broader reorganization wasn't referenced. Moreover, Your Honor,
when you brought in new people, what were the ages of the people that you brought in?
Well, Your Honor,
in those positions, in reorganized positions.
First of all, Your Honor, the reorganization here was massive. This took nine service line medical and executive directors over the clinical services that St. Vincent operates and spread their duties widely across the board, some up into higher vice president positions, some into similar medical director positions, and others to lower-level employees for a large part of what Dr. Terbergen was doing. In the record, there is note that Dr. Terbergen brought forward the list of duties that he had. And in an interrogatory question to the hospital, asked them to identify who was doing all of those things. 24 different individuals were highlighted, largely across the full spectrum of age. The more important analysis here, though, is okay, what about the group that he was terminated from? And that was the medical directors of the service lines. If you look at what happened to the medical directors, I would direct the court to page 15 of Apelli's brief. There it's very clear that age was not a factor here. Dr. Terbergen was 61. Another 61-year-old medical director was retained in a vice president position. There were five directors that were retained and five that weren't. Of those five that were retained, one was older. Three were within 10 years of Dr. Terbergen and therefore not substantially younger. And only one was more than 10 years younger than Dr. Terbergen. And that medical director was the director of a cardiology service line, which was kept in a cardiology function, and Dr. Terbergen has never asserted that he should have been given that position. Even if we look at the terminated directors, Your Honors, two of them were more than 10 years younger than Dr. Terbergen. One of them, there's no evidence in the record of his age, and one was within 10 years of Dr. Terbergen. So if you look at those service line medical directors and what happened to them, it's clear that age was not a driving factor about what occurred there. Moreover, Dr. Terbergen attempts to isolate the beginning of getting rid of the old comment to expand it beyond Mary Ann Scott, who it was about, and bring it out to a broader context, including Dr. Terbergen and four executive directors that were terminated by Hauser on the same day.
What was Mary Ann Scott? Remind me.
Mary Ann Scott was the executive director
of
the Children's Hospital.
She'd been there forever.
She had, Your Honor. She was 56 years old, and she had been there for approximately 23 years. And that's the other point that I think is very important to keep in mind about this old guard comment statement is, well, what does old guard mean? And I think this court's jurisprudence on comments and discrimination cases is a very good guide there. First and foremost, the Lukes versus Baxter Healthcare decision, as well as its earlier case from Baxter Healthcare, Lindsay, in which the comment "good old boys" was discussed. In Lukes, there was also a comment in which a supervisor said that someone was the old guy in the department. But even those types of comments in aggregate in those cases were not considered enough to reach a jury in an age discrimination case. Importantly, Your Honors, in Lukes, it was indicated by the court that we don't have to ignore what people mean in general parlance. And in Lukes, the good old boys comment was noted that, you know what, that doesn't really, anybody that uses American language knows that doesn't necessarily mean anybody that's either good or that's old. Similarly here, the old guard comment is commonly used in conversation to refer to the status quo or individuals that have been in a situation for a long period of time. Dr. Terbergen fits into both those categories. Fits into one but not the other.
Yeah.
Mary Ann Scott was 23.
He was pretty new.
He was. He'd only been with St. Vincent for 6 years. Where he does fit into the category, though, is it's undisputed in the record that he was a defender of the service line structure. He testified that when he was talked to with individuals about the service line structure, he indicated that he disagreed with the idea of changing from it, which immediately questions whether or not he would be a good person to put into the new structure, but it certainly falls into that other line of old guard. More importantly, though, Mary Ann Scott, Cindy Lee, and Linda Herman, the individuals who Dr. Terbergen is attempting to draw some connection with and who he asserts were also referred to in the old guard comment, were not individuals that had been there a short period of time like him. They were, in fact, there for a long tenure, all of them over 15 years each.
Was the 300 a reduction, an actual reduction, or some of those 300 replaced?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I don't understand your question.
There was a 300-person reduction in force, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Are those jobs gone? Are those slots gone then?
Many of those jobs were. There were two things going on, Your Honor. There's an overall reduction in force and reorganization at St. Vincent. Of that, there were a lot of positions that were completely eliminated. With respect to Dr. Terbergen and the other service line directors, though, that was that management over clinical services was reorganized. Some of those people were kept, some of them not. All in different positions, though. Lastly, Your Honor, before I run out of time, I would like to address the posting issue. Dr. Terbergen puts the cart before the horse in arguing that that St. Vincent didn't post these positions, so I couldn't know about them. Well, the important piece of that is Dr. Terbergen wouldn't have known about them even if they were posted because he didn't look at postings. He testified in his deposition that he's never looked at a St. Vincent posting, even though he knows that they're online. And as a result, to try to put some sort of discriminatory animus attached to the fact that something allegedly wasn't posted, though he hasn't proved through any evidence that it wasn't, does not bear his burden here. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Heston?
I was always admonished to button your coat.
Well, in the Supreme Court, you have to do that. That's a...
Judge Sharp reminded me of that a long time
ago.
Sounds
like something Judge Sharp would do.
One, Mr. Hauser selected the replacements. I don't have to prove all of them were fired for age. Just this narrow group. These are executives. His functions, I have to say, if I was in front of a jury and not this court, and my learned colleague in deposition answered and I agree with my statement that my client delivered, they broke up my job and gave it to younger employees, and defense counsel said that in front of a jury, I would be screaming that. You broke up my job and gave it to younger employees, and I agree. Now, we make those statements. And that's a pretty weighty statement in front of a jury. I'm at square one. Now I go beyond that and look to the individuals, Dr. Spangenberg. And the last point is
Spangenberg's position wasn't available until after Dr. DeVergen was gone, right?
And he was not even considered for that. The point is that Hauser's...
He didn't apply for that.
But Hauser was selecting a judge, and that's when he didn't apply for, because he was told, I would argue, why apply for something when the chairman of the board says it's over? But more importantly, Hauser selected everybody. He didn't even consider, it's undisputed that he did not consider Vern for anything, period, nothing. Couldn't remember it, he barely remember his own name. And he is the exclusive decision maker. Lastly, it is incorrect to say the only evidence comes from Dr. Laws. Marianne Scott has a declaration. She's entitled, that's not hearsay. She was an executive. That declaration is admissible evidence from which a jury can infer that the exclusive decision maker was mendacious, and he made those statements. I would say this in conclusion. The defendant is a wonderful hospital. My children were born there. I've been treated there. They chose to put an individual who I call the Grim Reaper in charge of terminations, and he terminated. They have to be responsible for that. If they didn't, they are responsible for it. He should be entitled to a jury trial. And based on the evidence that's before this court, if I was here as an appellant with a record before you, I can't believe that the court would pull the verdict and a plaintiff's verdict. Why? Because the case I had of Partington versus Roy Hill Industries. Thank you, John.
Could you repeat the last few words you said?
If I was here with a plaintiff's verdict, got by SJ, with the evidence that's before a jury, uh-huh, I would be surprised, based on the record I have seen in 30 years of doing employment discrimination, that this panel would reverse a jury verdict because of the issue of weight and how a jury may address, Your Honor, the weight of the evidence. They can throw out stuff, the classic jury instructions. Thank you, Your Honor.